first Yashikoyach to the Baal HaChabura of a couple of weeks ago, who spoke about Shem Rep Soyim Hashem. And he drew my attention to a Mara Mokim that I didn't know before. The Teichen I knew, but I didn't know the Urshtam of the Mara Mokim. The Mara Mokim, the citation, deals with whether it's a Shem Rep Soyim Hashem for somebody who knows that there is a sakona, can he rely on Shem Rep Soyim Hashem? I had seen it in a contemporary machaber, and I did not, I've written Shem Rep Soyim Hashem, I did not quote it for the reasons I'll explain in a moment, but he drew my attention to where it really came from. It came from a Beis Yosef, who's quoting Hagos Maimonides. That I can't ignore. I can ask kashis, but I can't ignore it. If it's somebody contemporary, I can dismiss it out of hand. To the point where I didn't even want to cite it. I didn't think it was anything to cite to dismiss. But let me try to explain. I originally thought that two things. Number one, that it doesn't fit into my understanding of Shem Rep Soyim. By the way, this is not the Chabur. This is just a few words before the Chabur. And in addition, I thought it was not just it doesn't fit into how I explain Shem Rep Soyim Hashem. Maybe other people can explain it differently, but I think there's a direct steer to it. I still think there's a direct steer. But let me explain why originally I didn't take it too seriously to start with. As I think I said a couple of weeks ago, as I understand the Sugya Shem Rep Soyim, we are dealing with a contradiction. It's us lama d'mokim sakona, and here we have a principle of Shem Rep Soyim Hashem. I can't accept sakonas. So the issue is, which sakonas can I accept, and which sakonas do I not accept? That was the topic of the Chabur then. I'm not going to talk about that now. To me, it seemed to be a very simple distinction. The distinction is, and what kind of sakona are you talking about? And what are you allowed to do and what you're not allowed to do? It seems to me that Shem Soim Hashem means what it says. If you're a Pesi, you're not too smart, you rely on the Rabbeinu Shleilom, he'll take care of you. However, some people in the room could probably still remember Evel Knievel, who went into a, no, he took a barrel. And can you see, somebody remembers. He a barrel over Niagara Falls or something. It was considered very dangerous.
I think he also two Twin Towers.
Anyone?
And he put a tightrope between two Twin Towers.
I'm not sure that's, or maybe, okay. Those tightrope walkers, the circus or whatever, whatever, they have protections of some kind or another. Going over the Niagara Falls, there was no protection whatsoever. So, you know, when I, once upon a time, I gave it as a kind of a moshul. A person is Shem Rep Soyim Hashem, I'm doing what I'm doing. Of course, the Baruch Shalom exercises his hashkocha. Not that it's a guarantee. The fact that I say Shem Rep Soyim Hashem and the Rabbi Shalom I've been talking doesn't mean that he's going to do what I want him to do. That you'll find in Svarim Chitzonim. I don't know if a single Rishon says something like that. If I'm not mistaken, the Chazon Ish in Amun B'tochen Void explains precisely that it's not correct. The Rabbi Shalom has Hashkocha, and we're talking about what's Mutar and what's Aser, but Shem Soim Hashem is not a Haftocha that he's going to be, I call them Matya, not a Haftocha. Shem Soim Hashem is Matya, certain Sakonis, but it's not a Haftocha that you're going to get the Shemira. If you're Roy Lois Hashkocha, you'll get it. If you're not Roy Lois Hashkocha, you won't get it, but you have a right, it's a Matya to put yourself in that Sakona. Whereas Evel Knievel, it's as if he's telling the Rabbi Shalom, aha, look at me, I'm such a great tzaddik. You want to take care of me, I don't have to worry about anything. And he says, Rabbeinu Shalom, don't be a daredevil. Maybe the devil will do what you want him to do, but I don't do things like that. So you have to know what's mutter and what's not mutter. So I start with the principle that Shem Soim Hashem is a kind of a matter of certain kinds of sakonis. And if it's a matter with certain types of sakonis, my idea is not going to make the slightest difference. Of course, I know the Shem Soim Hashem. I know this is Osir. I'm sorry. I know that this is a sakona. My only question is it a sakona that's muter, a sakona muteris, or a sakona ha'asura? That's what I have to figure out. And for that, we had a whole chabura telling me what's muter and what's not Osir. But basically, Shem Shem Hashem is for a person who is Noyi Kimin Hogei Shalaylam. And there is absolutely nothing in life that isn't dangerous. Everything is dangerous. Every morning you get up and you're in the sakona, and you have to make a decision about that sakona. And whatever decision you make, you're going to remain in the sakona. If you stay in bed and don't do anything, you may throw a blood clot. That's very, very dangerous. And as you get up, remember, this, sorry, don't remember Rabbi Mekhanotovsky, he got out of bed and he bumped his head against the wall or against the bedpost. He got a hematoma and Nebuchadnezzar is avek. That
Was this?
Rabbi Kanatovsky, he was Rosh Yeshiva here.
Oh,
He went to Bar Ilan to be the Rosh Yeshiva in Bar Ilan. They made the yeshiva. It was in the first couple of months.
very
It was very quickly. He got up and he banged his head, I think it was against a steel pole on the bed, and he got a hematoma and never. So we make take your choice. Are you going to with blood clot? You're going to get a hematoma, and both of them are in the category of Shem Shalom Hashem, because Baruch Hashem, we all got up this morning, and the Rabbeinu Shalom Hashem are matzil, and there are a lot of other ways in which we're in sakona all day long. And if you didn't make a decision, you soon become catatonic. I mean, they put you to a mental institution. You have to make these decisions. There's no way not to make these decisions, and every one of them involves a kind of Shem Shalom Hashem. So if you tell me I know it's a sakana, so what? So now I'm supposed to become catatonic? I'm supposed to do nothing? That's impossible. So this whole notion that just because I know it doesn't mean it becomes also to me. But I have that's just because I'm fitting it into this mesgeret. But forget that. We have machlokes from Meir and the Chachamim. The Chachamim say that it's also. The Meir says it's mutter. But if Reb Meir were to marry one of the Gimel Nashim, how in the world could he use a meir? He knows it's a sakana. So why did he record it altogether? Once he recorded it, I and everybody else knows that this is a sakana. Without him, I might not have known it was a sakana. In fact, I didn't know it was a sakana, the Gibel Noshim, until I learned the Gemara. We don't think it's a sakana. Rav Meir thought it was a sakana. I'm not interested now. That's also a different story altogether. Was he talking only about that sakana, as Rav Krieger thought, and bigger sakanas are mutter for everybody, v'chule, v'chule. But whatever it is, once he told me that this is Bechlau Shem Soim Hashem, I know it. I become the Talmud Chacham knows because I only did 3 lines of the Gemara. So why did he tell me in the first place? He shouldn't have told me. I could have relied on Shem Shalom Hashem. It's like the Machlekes is the Nesivos in the Mekor Chaim, Rebbe Kivager, whether Misasek is Asiyat Chatos or is it Putel Legamrei. Now, Lamai Nafkamina, whether I see somebody who forgot to take out the light from the refrigerator, can I let him open it or even ask him to open it for me? If it's Hetzer Gomer, I can let him do it for me. But one thing I certainly can't do. I can't tell him the light, he forgot to take the light out. That way he's not a Misasek anymore. He knows exactly what he's doing. So if you hold Hetzer Gomer, be quiet. But once you told him, he can't do it. So what's Reb Meir? He's putting it in the Gemara. The only person it's good for is somebody who doesn't know it. So I consider that a steer. So anyway, but on that, it should at least be mentioned since its source is Ilone Rabrave. It's not just a contemporary machaber. I thought the contemporary machaber was just Toya, but whatever it is, I have Akasha. No, the Akasha Shach finished. The Akasha remains. So let me now go to the topic for today. The topic for today is where Rabbi Willig left off when he talked about Chayrish. I don't want to talk about those things that were handled. I want to talk about other things. We've been negated to the Chayrish. The Chayrish, first let's talk about the Chayrish. Why is Chayrish? What's wrong with the Chayrish? We take it for granted the Chayrish, not of our das. Even if, as Rabbi Willig put it, it's a psul haguf, but the psul haguf has to have some kind of pshat. And whatever it is, the Torah says he's doing the cotton one way or another, and it's either because it's a psul haguf. The Achrayim don't use that word; they call it halacha mishmisinai. That's what it means. Or it's just because it doesn't have das. And then the problem comes with the Chayrish who does have das. That was spoken about. I'm not necessarily going to talk about that at all, but. The first thing is the association between das and speech. First of all, I will not quote Sphormtritsoinium in this room, but in Greek there is one word which means two things. It's a homonym. Logos, it means word and it means reason. And there were certain translators who got the Greek wrong. They used the wrong word. I'm not interested in that at all. But clearly, word and reason was associated in Greek. It's not just an accident. If that's not enough for you, in Arabic, kala means from ko, to speak and to reason. It's the same word.
What's the word in Arabic?
Kala. They spell it K-A-L-A. Kala, kala. So not say it's ko. No, it comes from ko. That's the verb to speak. Ko. No.
No, right, because I saw one of your book, the book of the Philosophical Quest. You talk about that.
Okay.
That sounds familiar.
I can quote myself now. All right.
That one,
Then,
I was.
and if you want a third source, the Rambam, there were medieval Arabic philosophers who were called the Mutakalamun, came from Kala, the Mutakalaman. I'll see, I'll do my best to tell you what I think that word means. But the Rambam quotes them in Hebrew, it's Ibn Tibbon. He calls them the Medabrim, the Mutakalamun or the Medabrim. It just occurred to me recently, I'll tell you why, but the scholars can't figure out what it meant. Some of them thought it's the medabrim, the plopling, the prattling, just talking don't mean anything. And the others realized that medabrim means thinkers, that medaber means reason, dibur is the same thing in Arabic. It's translated into Arabic, the Hebrew. They're real chachamim. They realize that in Arabic it means reason, so the Rambam is using it to mean reason in Hebrew also. Now, this just occurred to me, and I did not put it in writing because I didn't know about it until a day or two ago. It occurred to me just as it's my kiddush, and I'm not interested in it. Don't like it, don't keep it. But we have a pasuk in Chumash in Parshas Nosi. Moshe midaber elov midaber. I wouldn't know there was a midaber and midaber without Rashi. Rashi comes and tells me that midaber is hispael. I don't know how to conjugate verbs in Hebrew. Rashi told me it's Lashon Nekiyah, klapi Milo, talking about the Rabbeinu Shlomo. He's talking, and Moshe is listening. And that's why it's Lashon hispael. Occurred to me that, well, Rashi didn't know the Rambam, didn't know the Ranuchim. Of course he didn't. But if the Rambam were writing a Perush HaChumash, I am sure that he would say it's Midaber, one of his Hispael, because the Rambam has his own pshat in Nevuah. Nevuah is a Sefer HaPoel that communicates with the Novi. And yes, he can be Megala Sidus this way also, but that's not the purpose of Nevuah. Nevuah is a direct communication between the human intellect and this the Chochmas Hashem out there. It's lahavdil, what we do when you plug into the computer and you dial up Google, you dial yourself into a font of knowledge. You want to take it, you don't want it, don't take it. And if you're like me, you can't turn on the computer in the first place, then you're going to be denied all this wisdom. Yeah, Ram says you have to make it yourself in the voyage, you're in Madrega to know how to turn on the machine. Agav, there was a man, so his obituary appeared in yesterday's New York Times, Peter Higgs. Higgs won a Nobel Prize. He won a Nobel Prize because he was the guy who thought up the idea of what they now call Higgs boson. I know what Higgs boson. I know the word. I don't know what boson is. I don't know what Higgs boson is. But it's they could in physics now they call it the Yesod HaYesodis and the Amid HaLomais. When I went to school, that was called an atom. Now they got other things out there that are more fundamental.
You said God particle, right?
Yes, it's going a little bit too far. But I never heard it called a God particle. I heard it called Higgs boson. And in the obituary, he got a Nobel Prize for thinking of something. They say that he was 94 when he died. In all the years, he didn't know how to use a computer. He had a colleague, his name was Walker. I don't know who he is either. Shamus, he had a research assistant. The research assistant did everything that had to be done with the computer. So I don't feel so bad. I haven't won a Nobel Prize. So if I don't know how to use the computers, then not terrible. Other
You write your books, you do not use a word processor, you just you
you got the yellow page, you have a pen, that's what I use. I don't know how much I do. So the but you know the point of the Rambam is that you have a human seichel, and there's an abstract, it's a Chochmas Hashem out there, and if you manage to make contact, Rambam will decide what he's going to send you down the conveyor belt. He's not going to send you down, but that's the way you reach Chochmah. That's the way you reach Nevuah. To me, that's where if you don't take a look at the Pasuk, the Rambam is in the Pasuk. Vayishma hakol mitaber. It's the Hispayel. The Rambam is not talking to Moshe. He's talking to himself. Moshe is plugging in one way or another. And eventually he will decide once he's tuned in why he's going to let him know and why he's not going to let him know. For the Rambam, it's a wonderful pshat in the Pasuk. Now, I don't know how to conjugate a Hebrew verb. I should know how to conjugate an Arabic word. I don't know whether I have even transliterated it, midabrim, the mutakalamon. The Rambam doesn't have the kudus, at least my Rambam, as a Rambam with the kudus, I'd be interested. Does the Baal translation, the Baal Targum, translate midabrim or mitabrim? If he translates it mitabrim, I understand very well. And I think in Arabic that the Kalaman are this also, these people who are engaged in abstract reasoning of one kind or another. They, you know, they're reasoning, 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 that's what they're all about. But in any event, that's and the word is the same word as you use dibur. So dibur and reason go together, and you can go beyond that both to Rishonim and to other sources. The Hobbes and the Leviathan, two separate places, says that there. One place he says that there can't be reason. Thomas Hobbes, yes. I don't call that sort of concerning. I mean, it's not terrible, but when I have restraining who's supporting. Yeah, okay. He says that speech and reason go together. He's not talking linguistically. He's saying that one is the product of the other. Which came first, the chicken or the egg? I'm not really certain, although he tells me in a moment. But he's telling me that you can't have reason without speech, and you can't have speech without reason. Whether reason is simply subliminal speech or something else, I don't really know. I know that when I try to think, I have to think in words. So it's easy to convince me that first you have to develop speech, and then you can start thinking. In a second place, he says, children can't reason until they acquire speech. Now, he's clearly telling me that speech comes before reason. You might tell me the opposite, that it's only because I have reason that I can figure out how to do speech. Fine, I don't care.
I don't want to take off a different tangent. There's a discussion in the psychotherapy literature about that, and that's one of the problems of working with trauma victims, wherein the trauma took place in a pre-verbal stage. And because it was pre-verbal, the memories are not laid down in a verbal way. It's not really accessible in psychotherapy because they don't have the language to communicate that pre-verbal experience.
Interesting. I'm sorry, interesting. Can you send me something that's quotable? I'll have Professor Walker print it for me. Know my email address. There's also H.G. Wells. Not that that is necessarily proof of anything. No, this is not mad. This is all negeilah for things that are terror. I don't know about mad. What? Okay. This is literature. He wrote a short story, Island of Dr. Marina. I don't know. Okay, Moro. I never read it. But he has animals and he gives them larynxes because he wants them to be rational. He clearly starts with this that you have to have speech in order to have reason. If that's not enough for you, I have the everybody quotes the Rambam at the beginning of Trumuris. I prefer the Rav in the beginning of Trumuris because I think the Rav is more clear, much clearer. The Rav says that the Bartanur, yeah. who says there's no speech without reason. It's impossible for a person to develop speech unless he has reason. He puts it a little bit differently from the way I put it before, in the name of others. But he's saying that if you don't have speech, there can't be any kind of reasoning. So that's only the Hakdama. What I want to talk about today are several things that are shailos and halacha. First of all, a pikeach v'niskarish. Is a pikeach v'niskarish, is he a shaita or isn't he a shaita? Pikeach v'niskarish, he learned how to speak when he had reason. Now he's a cherish, does he have din of a cherish? But he's just because he was a cherish, he had chalila for anybody who had cancer of the larynx. They took out his voice box. And they also had something to do with his auditory nerve and the trauma of some kind, and he can't hear anymore. Does he suddenly become a cherish because of that? And then there is a second shaila of what is called speech, and this is in Achrayim. They call it loshen alagim. I don't know what alagim really means. I know what they mean, but I don't know what the word means. I know it because I know what they're talking about. Guttural speech. There are a lot of Hiroshim out there who they make noise. I can't understand them. Some of them can be understood by relatives or caregivers or who what, and some of them can be understood by anybody, but they're clearly trying to talk. Is that kind of speech is a speech, or isn't it a speech? And then I have another shaila. We all know what the chalik Hirosh is postulated is. Very good. So you won't take him to be an aid on the get. He'll take somebody else for an aid on Seder Kedushin. In the Bezdin, we operate, sure, anyway, who cares? We take Sulim in Bezdin also. What doesn't affect the Cherish so terribly much? What it does affect are mitzvahs. Basically, who cares? If he wants to do mitzvahs, let him do mitzvahs. Is he mechuyav mitzvahs, not mechuyav mitzvahs? If the Cherish bizmanenu isn't called a Cherish, it doesn't really make all that much difference. To me, there is one area in which it's absolutely significant, and Baruch Hashem, I found the source of it that discusses it. Nobody else even talks about it. The shaila is, if you have a Chareshes, and she gets married, can she be Baidik herself? Zainakim, should be Chavrisa Baidik herself. You need somebody else to be Baidiker. She has not das to be Baidik. I found one source, and that source is Reb Moshe. I'm a Cherish Mizbanenim, not once upon a time. It's not, I can't find the Negros Moshe. Maybe it is someplace, I don't know. But it's in Shimon Eiter. Shimon Eiter in the back of his pamphlets, not a pamphlet, it's a paperback, but a Sefer on Hilchos Nida, he has, I think, 15, 16 Shulis from Reb Moshe. One of them is Ishaela Mamish. So Rav Meisha says that if it's a cherish who married the Chareshes, then it's only Kedusha to Rabbanon, and she can be Baidik herself because we don't care. He's a cotton. The cherish doesn't have a cotton. You don't have to be mafreshim for me iser. He says this is called lafreshim isura. I don't have to be mafreshim. Let him do what he wants. It's not being sofu biyadayim. I presume. I'm not. I think it's a little bit of a fetish. If Sashik Shalom says it's one of our royals, I tell him, go get married. I suspect that there may be kind of a leaf naiver here, but I mean, it's like a sofa miyadayim. Okay, so it's not a sofa miyadayim. In any event, Ramosha says that they weren't geyser on a cherish who marries a chereshes. And he thinks that a cherish, bizman hazeh, even once we're educated, have a din of a cherish. And ein hachinami, if you'll have somebody who marries the chareshes, and we'll talk about the status of the kiddushin some other time, she needs chavriseha to be baidik. She can't do it by herself. And she has no namonas because she's a shaitan. Don't confuse me in telling me that she can solve quadratic equations. Not interested. Now, the other shaila. And this is a psak din of the Boti Din Rabbonim. It's in volume 10. The issue was a woman who was a chareshes and she wanted to be megayer. Kotten, you megayer, al das bezden. Zochin lodom, shloy bifonov. What about for a cheresh? We don't find any places that they were. The bezden is mezake a cheresh with the gerus. So there's a Beis Din. It was then Beis Din Yisur in Tel Aviv. Two of the three Dayonim were Rabbi Dykovsky, and the other one was with a Z, no, with a Z. Zimbalist, yeah, Rabbi Zimbalist. They disagreed. And the Das HaRabim, which must have been Azulai, who agreed with one of them, says you can't be Mekabel her, and the other says you can't be Mekabel her as a Geirus. What was she? She spoke a Loshon, at least a few words. She seemed to be what we would call a Pikeach, you know, a modern day Geirish, and most Chiroshim today are educable. And don't have to be Helen Keller for this. You have to be Helen Keller with that kind of das, maybe, but you know, an ordinary kind of das that you need is Rabbi Willie quoted the Rashash, who cited the Stummschule, or in Vienna, they had such a place for the people who were Chiroshim, and they managed to teach them. Now, the Rashash is interesting. The Rashash is trying to answer a Marshal's kasha in the Chochmah Shleima. The Gemara talks about a pishayach and whether he can really get lishti. He says, how did he come? Where did he get the das to write in the first place? So if so the Marshal says he learned how to do this when he was a kotan, and the kotan has no das. Comes Rashash, doesn't say anything about Loch. He says, no, Bikasha, how he did it. They had a shul, they had a shula in Vienna, so Chazal could do this also. They could teach him, but you know, that's no Bikasha on why he knew how to learn, how to write. Okay. But I think it's there's more to it than him. After him, or maybe I don't know if I'm not a historian, you have to have somebody else. I think that the Ksav Sefer must have been just about a contemporary of the Rashash, maybe a little bit earlier, I don't know. A little earlier, okay. The Ksav Sefer is quoted by his son, who is the Shevet Sefer. The Shevet Sefer says that his father went, he doesn't quote the Rashash, they went to the same school in Vienna. They saw what was going on there. And he seems to remember that his father said to send them tefillin. They should put on tefillin, things levdas. They should put on the film. So we have what is here, you know, the rudimentary shaila or the rudimentary sources dealing with whether the Cheirish Bizmanenu, who's educable, is he mitzvah, is considered to be a bardas, or is he not a bardas? What the Achrenim call is this halacha meishmishina, he's possible, don't confuse me with the facts, or is a Cheirish a bardas? And if it's not halacha meishmishina, it's just empirical, he doesn't have das. A cotton is halacha meishmishina, but give me a Cheirish who has das. He's not a Jewish, all Chazal meant that we don't know how to educate him. Sorry.
The Nachman Rebbe mentioned earlier about the guttural, the person making the sounds, and the person with the cancer in the larynx. Doesn't the Baruch Hagiga say that someone's not a Cheresh, they're a Shota, unless they're alien and Cheresh? They're just someone who can't make sounds, but they can hear
Yes,
sounds. So
but
they're
then the
technically a bardas for everything in the world. They can't, it doesn't matter if it's speech or not. And larynx also, it doesn't matter if it's speech or not. They can't make an
who
analysis.
said so?
The Gemara, the Rambam.
No.
Unless they're both mute and deaf.
The Cheresh is by definition a deaf mute, right?
It's the same
Not,
Gemara.
yeah, but if he has it, the question now
If
is,
he had cans or his larynx, he could still hear. So is Eli.
yeah, I told you he's lost the hearing as the
He
root of,
lost hearing also, so
as
he
a
can't
result of an
both hear
accident.
and his larynx.
Yeah,
Okay,
sure.
so the guttural people who make a sound, their ears are also broken.
Can their ears broken? I'll talk about that in a minute.
Meaning they have to, if they can hear, they can't speak a sound, then pashut their bardas. Meaning there's not enough to know if both things are not working.
I can. The question will be, will this kind of speech be enough?
But meaning that they can't hear anything.
Again, they can't hear anything. Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
Unless
Or.
the shaila is to, and the people who are educated can hear. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. I'll talk about the mitzvahs. Well, you know. The halacha may be a little bit different. It may not take full cognizance of our mitzvahs, but I'll also explain in a moment. We have a lot of sources. The earliest sources that I know of, the Halachos Ktanos, but that's minor in terms of people who are being quoted. The earliest real source that's quoted is the Tzemach Tzedek, HaZaken, they call them, the old one, the Tzemach Tzedek of Nicholsburg, Dasa, as distinct from the Tzemach Tzedek who came from a certain, who came from a certain town called Lubavitch, right? This was the other, the old Tzemach Tzedek. He,
Yeah, I quote Michael Moore, I think, quote one of his children's.
yeah,
That's
it's,
the one that the Rebbe's putting down.
I quote him. This was a Cheresh. He was a tailor. No, he's described. The Tzemach Tzedek describes him as a tailor, and kept, I've seen other references to Hiroshima were tailors. For whatever reason, seems to have been one of the occupations that they could master. And he was a pekeich holdover, and he even went to Din Teiris, his own Din Teiris, who's both a Toyin and a Nitan, and they used that as a raya that he was a Bardas. I don't think that's very much of a raya as a Bardas. I know Toyin, but I don't consider him a Bardas. But okay. There were different Tanaim once upon a time, or I'm being too cynical about contemporary Tanaim, but it's clear that everybody knew that this gentleman was a Bardas. And the Tzemach Tzedek said, what difference does it make? He's a Cheresh. A Cheresh is at all the disadvantages of a Cheresh. And then we have all kinds of other Achronim who disagree, including, we'll talk maybe a little bit more about later. There's a Mincha Shloimeh in Chelek Aleph, Simen Lamed Daled, two tshuvas that disagree with each other. And he quotes the second one, he quotes himself. It's him, he's writing it. Nobody, I mean, I presume he quotes the first one as if it agreed with the second one. I don't consider to be any big steerer there because in both cases he mentions all the svaras. And in both cases, he says, yeah, but you have to not be makriya these things. And how can we be makriya? But it's very clear that in the second one, he thinks he's a cheresh l'choldover. I'm sorry, he's a pekeach l'choldover. And in fact, it's his last line. And also, Seif HaZlinon, Nir l'inyan cheresh sholamaisa kosher me'od l'akriya. Bedover shidori teira shemimem on shleisig v'arichu b'zeh al v'gam koshem oed l'tchesu v'chatz v'sholem mikiyu mitzvahs. And, go give him a pair of film. He thinks that with him didn't make very much difference for anything else. Did you have to give him film? Don't you have to give him film?
Yeah, but the teacher Torah gets hard. Is it Arvitz Torah?
I wanted, I don't know, I don't know if we'll get to it today. What do I wanted to do in the, it's abstracting the Piskei Rabbanim in volume 10, I believe. And they disagree. And I think they're both wrong. Now, I don't know what my maskana is, but one of the things that I have to talk about is whether it's a schus for a cherish to be nisgaya. Now, is this schus for a cotton to be nisgaya? If the Geirus is drabonon altogether, I'm not quite sure it's any schus for anybody. But that's machlokes, it's a Bali Tesis. There are Bali Tesis who think that the Geirus of a cotton is a deraisa. Talk about mechua afterwards. And so it must be some kind of a schus for the cotton. And clearly, once you hold, you have no, you have three sheets in Tesis. And you have no halachic pshat in each one of them. Dachrenim, they're mefalpo. But if you tell me if he's not my afterwards, it becomes a Geirus midoraisa that's a Gili Milsa was the Chus Mikora, then of course, it's a mitzvah to teach him Talmud to Torah. And what about himself? Will he get schar for the mitzvahs that he does? So here we have there are two separate shaylos. One is a Kotten and the other is an Akum. Ramesha says that an Akum is an Eina Mitzvah Eisa, and he does not get Schar as an Eina Mitzvah Eisa. I have a Reb Sadia Gaon who says that an Akum gets Schar as a Mitzvah Eisa. Okay, he didn't grivel in these things. He wasn't required to know it. He takes it for granted that the cotton gets Schar as an Eina Mitzvah Eisa. I'm not sure that it's true. And if it is true, it can only be a cotton who is beyond a misasa. I mean, there was a shear for this all. The misasi, he doesn't know what it's all about. Then he's not going to get schar. And if he's older than that, so he's not a misasi, does he get schar? Or doesn't he get schar? I think Ramesh is probably right, which means then, well, now I'm dealing with a cherish. What's a cherish? Is he's totally deaf and dumb, knows nothing, and he's a kotten shebektanin, in which case, how can he get schar for this? So what kind of schus is this for the kot, for the cherish? Or are you going to tell me that he's got some kind of das, like a kotten can have some kind of das, and therefore he's not a misasik? But who says a kotten has any kind of das? Maybe it's all or nothing. The clock turns 13, and Yom Echad, he's a godel. Yesterday he had no das. Now, I think that there otherwise he's not a misasik, but whether he's a name of I have no idea. The Torah is not talking to him, but then Torah is not talking to Goy either, and he gets scars in the Tzuvah. The only Rayas that I do have, they start, and Rav Shlomo Zalman quotes this, it starts with Iksam Sofer. Iksam Sofer talks about when does a Ben Noach become a Godel? And he says something which is a chiddush. And after him, they split down the middle. Some of them dismiss him out of hand. And, but you know, the poor, he has a good time. And others take it with everything. They say it's absolutely right. He's talking about when is a ben noyach a godel? He says, it can't be Yud-Gimel V'Yemechod, says he, because Yud-Gimel V'Yemechod is a shiur. And the Rambam says, shiur v'halocha m'shiv Sinai, and v'Noyach don't have shiurim. So it can't be Yud-Gimel V'Yemechod. But don't tell me that a two-year-old is also chayav misa for as a ben noyach if he does one of the shavu mitzvahs, or he's away for the shavu mitzvahs. So it must be kifi hispatchus daito. What he doesn't tell me is how far the das has to be mispateach, and he nowhere says that he has to have the das of a ben yud gimel of a Jew. Then the ordinary one would be ben yud gimel, would be a different reason altogether. But he says it's a spatkus das. Don't ask me what the shiur of das is, or to put it in different language, what score does he have to get on an IQ test or a Stanford B'nai test for me to consider him to be a gadol? But that's what the Chassam Sofer says. He's got, and the others who disagree with him say, yeah, sure, Ben Noach don't have shurim. That's what you're talking about. Chatzi shir, chatzi beya, gezayis. Those things they don't have. And Pasha is good enough for them. Everything's Pesach. Yeah, it's a Hir Machai is also Ben Mashu for Ben Noach. But you're talking about other things. Yeah, it's a kind of we call it a shear, but it's not really a shear. You're talking about seichel. Seichel can't buy it in the 5 and 10 by the pound or by the ounce or what have you. It's a different concept of shear. It's mufka from what the Rambam calls halacha meishim Sinai. But the subsefer held that it depends upon the shear of the spatrus. Come others afterwards. Shlomo Zalman the first time says as if it was his own. In the second one, he tells us that he got it someplace else. He got it from, he says, two sources. Divrei Chaim Auerbach, Niske Momen, Simen Yud Aleph. I don't know Divrei Chaim Auerbach, what it is. It's not the Divrei Chaim, it's not the Sanzer. And it's not the Auerbach who wrote on Or HaChaim. His was Bayer Auerbach. So I don't know if Chaim Auerbach wrote on this moment, but I didn't go looking in the library. And then he tells me the Sefer Hiseris Tshuva. That already I know. Hiseris Tshuva is a great grandson of the Chassam Sofer, whoever it is. It's going all B'shitas Zayde. And he goes on to say that, interesting argument. He goes on to say that if a Ben Noach becomes a Godel with his Paskus Adas, which I don't know how to measure, but if that's true for Ben Noach, then if we have a Yisrael, a Kotten, who has reached the intellectual maturity of a Ben Noach, who's called a Godel, he's Chayiv and Sheva Mitzvahs Ben Noach. And if that's not enough, If he eats Eiver Min HaChai, he'll be Nidain with Mbut Misa, Ve'ed Echad, V'dayin Echad, just like a goy. We treat him, and what he's saying is that you don't go from Kedusha Kala to Kedusha Chamura, you didn't lose the Kedusha Kala. And Miyukimini throws both into that as the Knei Mido. So they're telling me that he's also going to have this kind of a shear. Now, Shlomo Zalman, I think this must be him, but he proceeds to tell me that the same thing should be true for a Cherish in Bnei Noach. There's no difference between a Kotan and a Cherish for Bnei Noach. And if a Cherish will have the das of what we call, quotes, a Kotan, who is a Godel B'din Bnei Noach, then the Cherish is also a Bardas. And should be treated exactly like a Bardas. Now, A equals B, B equals C, therefore A equals C. He transposes this to a Cherish and says that a Cherish has got that kind of das. He's like a Godel of a Ben Noach. And El Buchayiv and Mitzvahs of Ben Noach with the whole Tradadam that we call a Bardas. And whatever else, whatever else it means, but at least for Shev and Mitzvahs Ben Noach, he wants to call this a Bardas. But what we have basically are a whole list of achronim. Some of them take it for granted that a cherish is halacha moshe misinai or a psul haguf, and don't tell me how smart he is. And then there are the barb shik was mesupik. He's one of the ones who was mesupik in this, or you could tell me that he has das if he has das, and we treat him as a bar das. It's only empirical. Cherish had no way he could become a bar das. But if he somehow became a bar das, or you taught him, then you see he has das. He's a pikeach l'choldover. And then there's some people who are mesupik. There's those three possibilities, I presume. Well, the chelkei hasoiser. Then we have to talk about how you define a cherish. So if it has nothing to do with das, then we need a definition. Now we already have Rishonim, and there is a Nukhi Yosef who is clear as can be in above a Kama Lamed Ches. He says that it's impossible for a person to be a bar das unless he has speech. Okay, and that's the Mikvotonim Metzias. The question now is, how do we define speech in halacha? And do we accept this kind of notion that speech is a clay mido to tell me that he has das, or that the das of somebody who can speak, counts for something? Now, Reb Moshe in Evin Ezer, in one of the Chuvos in Evin Ezer, he defines speech as anybody who can hear, no matter how high or how loud, you have to shout in order to make him hear. I think it's a milsim mustaver. It makes a lot of sense. I know very well, you know, we talk all the time of subclinical phenomena, things that I see under a microscope, the ferrous soil with the schrotzim, v'chule, v'chule. There's a Rav Tokachinsky, and he wrote a little kundras bein hashmoshes. And there he talks about how you define Bein HaShmoshes, but Bein HaShar, there's Eilis Medrash B'lechidush, he's got other chidushim. He talks about a Gemara, it talks about eyesight, how far a Roya can see, and he says that for purposes of sight, we define the sight the way the Roya once upon a time could see. Bein HaShitim, if not in the words, he's telling you who says our eyesight is good, who says that what we can't see, what we can see, that what we can't see, the Roya might have been able to see. So now you create all kinds of sphakas. So if I had to paraphrase, I'd say that Rav Tokachinsky says that for purpose of sight, we define this 20/20 eyesight, whatever a Beinoni at least can see. And who says we're Beinoni? I don't know whether we're Beinoni or not. But Shmia isn't, it's not totally in the Shmia of a Beinoni, says Rav Moshe. If you can hear, and I understand it, I have three Rishonim who say the same thing, that Das is totally in Dibur. And if I can hear, then I could acquire, reason. I can talk if I can hear. And in the real world, except for, you know, the takbulos, as the Achronim call it, the things that they learned how to teach people who have no hearing, But if you see anybody with a hearing aid, you know one thing. I think that for Rav Moshe, he's a bardas l'chol dover. Otherwise, he wasted his money. There is no such thing as the sting from a cochlear implant. A hearing aid is only for somebody who can hear. A hearing aid is nothing more than a microphone. You shout into the microphone. The person who's far, far away can hear. It amplifies the coil, or it does something else. I don't know exactly what it does. But if you didn't have hearing, you wouldn't be able to hear. So I mean, that's the problem. If he's wearing a hearing aid, you know he's not. He can't be a Chairish anymore, according to Revelation. Chabishba Deazil says the same thing, only for a totally different reason. For a reason I would never say. I think it's wrong. Mishnah Yisrael says that with a hearing aid, he can hear. What do I care how he hears? No, it doesn't quote Ramesh. Ramesh says, you shout at him, he hears. You shout into the hearing aid, he hears. Mali shouting, Mali hearing aid. And I part company. And yeah, Lamais, I think he's right. But because the hearing aid is him hearing, even though it may be a microphone, I don't think he can be Yitzchak Shofer listening on the hearing aid because it's not a Kol Adam. But if I have to define whether a person can become educated, who says he has to hear it from a human being, he hears it from a monkey, it's also good. He's hearing it from the hearing aid. He's hearing it from a microphone. What do I care? There's a Kol Shmi of one kind or another. Otherwise, the hearing aid wouldn't help. Which means that he's got the dibur. I'm sorry, he's got shmiya, and if there's hearing, hearing is enough to engage in reason. You can use the hearing in order to hear whatever you have to learn. You become a bardas, but then you have other later achrenim. Rav Zalman quotes Rav Eliashiv again. I haven't seen the Jews. Maybe it's there someplace. Who agreed with him in the Lashon Acharon, that if you can teach a Chairish how to think, etc., that he has a din of a bardas. And Rav Herzog said that in the Heichel Yitzchok as well. We have loads of these later Acharonim who say the same thing. So now the question is, what? Sorry? If he even for and he means clearly, he didn't know the longest the person is using a hearing aid, he's got residual hearing, and that you're just shouting into the ear. He thought that it was only the hearing aid, but the hearing aid, he thought it was artificial hearing. And don't that I cannot explain these people. Again, if you want to, you know, for all of this, there's Rav Halpern, who has Kashmal Bahalofa, he has pages and pages of the ones who hold you can be Yates and Mikra Megill on a microphone, and ones who can't hold you can be Yates and Mikra Megill on a microphone, and ones who say it's a Sophic. And if you want more, there's a new Sefer, which I haven't gone through, I just have it. It's called Oizen Shemas, basically dealing with artificial kinds of hearing. Now, again, I don't know if we'll have time to get to it, but there is a world of difference between a hearing aid and a ocular implant. As I understand it, and I have two gesoys in the ocular implant, they both come from one source. My source was a professor of audiology. I asked him the first time about hearing aids, and later I asked about ocular implants. And as he was masber to me, he told me ocular implants. No, they call them ocular implants. They're these. The hearing aid goes into the ear. The ocular implant goes into the skull. They have to make it. They put something right into the auditory nerve, directly into the auditory nerve. Now, as he told,
or more distal. I was one of his more distal. Maybe it's into the parietal cortex. The auditory cortex.
That's, to me, it's the same thing. Whether it goes into the auditory cortex or goes into the auditory, you know, to me, it's a Shem Koyl. I know there's a difference, but my nafkamina. I know exactly what's going on here. This is what Chazal called Roin Es Hanishma B'Shem Esenira. There are centers in these, and I can stimulate them many different ways. Darkei Shalom, hearing, airways, vocal waves that stimulates an auditory nerve and I hear it. And there are other kinds of light waves that stimulate the rods and the cones, who knows what, and I see it. But if the rods and the cones, if the light waves would stimulate the auditory nerve, I would hear and not see, and vice versa. That's simple pshat in Shemus and Yireh and Ro'eh Nes HaNishma. And some people can pick it up by tapping if you talk and you get vibrations on the table. There are some people who will be taught how to hear that way also. It's another way of stimulating whatever they're stimulating there. They don't hear it the same way, but that's cool. You can be used to Yishrei for that way. Maybe. It's different. It's not a microphone. It's not a false sound. Whatever it is, it is. Now, the second time when I asked this same professor of audiology what it is about the ocular implant, so he explained to me that it doesn't use a microphone. What does it do? And incidentally, people they hesitate to get the implant because, and it's a shaylan halacha also, but nobody poses a shaylan halacha. They hesitate to get it because till now they were using hearing aids, usually two hearing aids. But once you use the auditory implant, the ocular implant, you have to kill whatever residual hearing is there. Yeah, you can't be able to hear anymore. The thing won't help you anymore. So me, Lishitasi, to me it was a big problem whether you can tell somebody it's okay to do it. Why is it a big problem? Because I know that this person has residual hearing. If he has residual hearing, forget about the hearing aid. You want to be used to a shofar, stand right next to the Baal Tikvah. If you have enough hearing, you'll hear it. You want to hear Parshas Zohar, stand right next to the Bakri, you'll hear it. Megillah, you can read for yourself, whatever. Once you're doing this, if you do it on two sides, you're now a cheresh, and you're not going to hear anything other than through the auditory implant. So am I being mafkia, this person from this mitzvah, which is, and I go to outer space, be mafkia myself from mitzvahs that are totally in Zman. Or are there no mitzvahs in outer space? Now this becomes it becomes very complicated, and I'm not really interested in talking about that right now. But what the first guy told me was that when you use a cochlear implant, you use something which it goes not through anything artificial. It's not an electrical impulse. That's to me, a microphone means electricity, one kind or another. He says it's not an electrical impulse that does it. It's a stimulus that goes, the coil goes direct, it's transported directly to the auditory nerve, or you want to tell me the auditory cortex, I couldn't care less. He's telling me that the macabre of Shmiya is being stimulated directly by the human voice. And all this thing is doing is it's being miraculous, like a megaphone. All the things that are okay, they're megaphones. So this is just a new kind of a megaphone. Then, am I sure that this is called Shmiya? I wrote something about it, and I said, I think it is, but who says I'm right? That if I can stimulate the auditory nerve in some other way, that I can call the Shmiya for purposes of everything that requires Shmiya. And then somebody else, his name is Haber, from the OU, had a son who was a rov in Buffalo. I not only known from the telephone, a fine young man, I've been there. He wanted to write about it. And I told him, I don't know anything about this. I got it from this professor. I give you the professor's phone number, call him. And he calls the guy and he tells him, the what he told me. He tells him that there's a microphone in there which is doing all of this, and there are electrical synapses in all of this. So he's got I haven't gained very much. In terms of halacha, I don't think if that's true. And today I don't know anymore, because I don't know anymore because he had a kapeda to me. What was his kapeda? Because I had written something about a cheresh, and he's a great libertarian. He tells me he doesn't know about halacha, but he does know something about human relations and even a little psychology. He thinks he knows. And you have to treat them like normal. And like it being, you have to treat people who are hard of hearing as if they'd be normal. And I'm telling them that they're disadvantaged from the point of halacha. He agrees I may be right, but he has a distaste for the whole business, which makes me think that when I asked him about the auditory implant, he may have been mishanker poshut for all I know. I told the other guy the truth. Anyway, I'm not an engineer. You have to know engineering physics. I didn't get my Nobel Prize yet, so I have to ask the Mumkin how it works. And Lemaisa, I can't figure out how it works because they read the literature and they don't really tell you how it works. They'll give you all kinds of instructions, this, that. You have to talk to an engineer who invented this in the first place to find out really how it works. They're not really interested in the physiology. They're interested in the mechanics. They should be interested in mechanics, isn't just anything else. But in any event, that what? Ocular impact. Cochlear. I didn't say ocular. Cochlear.
Cochleal.
Yes, cochlear implants. Yeah. No, I'm sorry. Cochlear implants. And they're marvelous. I mean, the people who have them tell me they're marvelous.
The three people we had one have on our show. Solid Spirit has one.
Sure.
Maybe it's my poor elocution. He doesn't understand a word I say.
It's not my field. I have no idea. I know people who have it, and I can talk to them on the telephone. Before I couldn't. And they claim they hear everything.
One of the boys Nishima's daughter has one. The doctor told them the sooner you get it, the more you can save her hearing. The longer you wait, the worse it can be. So yeah, so an age one and two she got.
Well, again, what they tell me, I know nothing myself. They tell me that people who have perfect speech, and you have people who walk around with two hearing aids that had perfect speech, they had that it was they're suffering from something genetic and it's degenerative. And I'm sorry, it's not necessarily genetic, it could have been from something else, but it had to be degenerative. And they started out with perfect hearing because otherwise they wouldn't have perfect speech. Okay, that fits into with everything that I know. The perfect people who, and it can degenerate. And if you have something which is genetic, it does degenerate. It gets worse as you get older. So, and if you get the, and it's a problem of education, how do you teach these people? And they tell you that the sooner they get speech, the better off they are because A, they can speak and it helps them for a lot of things. We've been talking about that the whole time. With I understand it, the cochlear implant, they actually destroy the nerve and you can't go back to hearing aids afterwards. The hearing aid's not going to help you. So that you're basically taking a risk. But that's the doctor's business. Does he know it's going to get worse or not going to get worse? I presume he told you it does. He knows what he's talking about. Certainly, you can predict it if you take audiological tests over a period of time and it gets progressively worse. You can predict it's going to get even worse tomorrow. That's a medical diagnosis. The shilas, nobody's really asking.
The residual side effects, I just a quick Google say it seems like it may or may not happen. I don't know, destroy residual hearing.
Where with the cochlear implant? Again,
So maybe they refine the procedure so
maybe they
that
have. I'm talking about things that happened at least 15 or 20 years ago.
many patients are surprised that they may think there was residual hearing after the surgery.
Okay, I was told that you got to,
One.
Okay, very good. I'm happy to hear it. In any event, that's the, now let me go back and how we got off this far. The question now, what is speech for purposes of a cherish? And what about a pikeach and nischarish? It seems to me that the shaila of a pikeach shen nischarish is exactly the same shaila as we're talking about. Is it a psul laguv for halacha mishum Sinai, or is it because of soren and das? The pikeach nischarish didn't lose his mind. He's no stupider than he was before. He's at least the same bar das as the ones that we know how to treat today and make them into a bar das. So a pikeach shen nischarish should be a bar das if you think, and vice versa. If you can manage to teach him without speech, it should be the same thing. It should be hainohach. Except I have people who seem to disagree. And they all start with one thing. They start with the Gemara who talks about a person who is medaber mitoyach chatzav. And he can say, he's machlekes, and he write to get leash. So Rashi says it's talking about Bikesh and Scharish. Once you have the Rishash, you can easily say he's talking about somebody who we're talking about a different tribe altogether. I would learn Pshat in the Machlokes, and others seem to be saying that we're talking about is whether Ksiv is Kedir B'Domi and Lavati Sfasayim is Xer Sakosu, but otherwise writing a speech. Can you write Xer Sayim? I know all these Shilas. If you say Ksiv is Kedibur, then can you go write anything that requires speech? But it seems to me that in the Gemara, what you're dealing with is it's a chiddush. I would precisely the Shaila. What's how you define the cherish? You define the cherish, person who can talk, pikeach shinischarish, he can't talk anymore. He may not be able to talk either, for all I know. And talking won't really make very much difference. But he's a cherish, he can't hear, he's an ishramea. And if you tell me it's all totally in das, he has the same das as he had before he became an ischarish. Except I have Achrenim who are taking the Chevel Mishnei Hatzdodim. And I don't think you can take the Chevel Mishnei Hatzdodim. If you tell me one, then you have to tell me the other. If you don't tell me the other, then you have to tell me one. If you're telling me that it's totally in Das, then Das is Das. And if he has Das, then if I educated him, he's got Das. And you can't tell me that a B'keyash in Iskarish is a cherish. You tell it's not a cherish. You're telling me that it's halacha Moshe Misina. If you tell me I can't use the das of today, Reb Moshe seems to do that. He takes it from both sides. To me, that was a kind of a tab of plea. The other thing is the other way around. They talk about this Loshen Agolim. Now, what Loshen Agolim is, I know and I don't know. They look in the Acharonim also. So, with an ayin, but alagim, alagim. It's guttural speech. Loshen alagim. The Shlomo Zalman tells me if other people can understand him, it's okay. If other people can't understand him, it's not okay. Now I have it. I had two brothers who came to my shul, not regularly, every once in a while. One of them learned in yeshiva even. He was fine, and the other. And was a cherish, but he spoke Loshen Alagim. Brother understood him. I couldn't understand the word. He was a badass. Is this called a dibur? Isn't it called a dibur? And how many people have to understand it for it to be called a dibur? So if you tell me that it's halacha mishmishin, you have to be a dibur. No, I have to find out. Is this dibur? It might be dibur. If I have a chreinim or misupik, whether Loshen Alagim is called Dibur, I understand what they're talking about. They want those a Dibur. Das he has, but that's not enough for them. He has to have a Dibur also, because otherwise he's a Cherish. If you tell me that a Cherish is all totally in Das, then what's your Shaila with Loshen Alagim? And don't tell me that the modern Cherish is okay, and tell me that Loshen Alagim is not okay. It doesn't make sense. Of the modern Cherish is a Pekech Holdover, but because his Dibur is Loshen Alakim, if it wouldn't be that, everything would be fine. It can't be. I mean, it's either one or the other. So I end up with some Achrenim who seem to be saying to themselves, and I say to themselves only because they weren't here when Rabbi Willi explained the difference between the Psul Cherish as being a Psul Aguf or Psul Medaber. I think that's a Machlekes in the Gemara of Medaber Metechak Tasa, Machlekes of Shimon Gamliel, and the Chachamim, and that depending upon who you hold with Kerish Sheh, you'll have to be Machria whether this Kerish Bizman Hazeh that has absolute total Das, whether he's called a Bardas or he's called a Kerish. Rav Shlomo Zalman has a very nice expression. He says the ones who went to the school, they know more than the Malamda. They taught it. Helen Keller, no. We could. That's the second one where he seems to, in the first one, he seems to say it's not about that. But he goes back and forth in both of them with the same Sam Sefer, the same Shailas. And the second one, he says, well, he tells me it's not about that. He knows more than the teacher knows. And he was talking about, he was rebutting a Maram Shik. Maram Shik was saying that when he talks or does whatever, it's not his Das, it's the Malamed's Das. I mean, it's okay. Adkan. No point in talking about things like that.
Next week, no Chavura. Monday, no. No, really, no Chavura. Monday, 16th, question.
Mother of the night. For that. I owe you a reference to my book. I'll type one down.
If you can find it, then it's, no, that's it'd be interesting.
16th of the month, isn't it? The mice would.